This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The National Union of Mine Workers celebrated its 40th anniversary in Limpopo this weekend. The anniversary comes amid challenges that, of course, and these are South African challenges. You would have heard Satu there talking about the ANC heading into a conference and what they're asking the ANC to pronounce on, which is, amongst others, to unite, prioritize that, prioritize also the economy, prioritize land, service land for all workers so that they could get houses. Crime is a serious challenge. And then lastly, of course, they were also talking about the ANC must fix Eskom. Well, of course, we're now with the National Union of Mine Workers. And let's just go straight to Mpo. Mpo, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power Perspective. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. And how are you, Denzel?
Mpo, I'm going to estimate, Mpo, that you're older than the 40 years that the union would be.
that of course, yes, of course, a little bit older than that.
A little bit, Chief. I would also say I'm a little bit older than the 40 years. But here's something to celebrate, actually, and 40 years of a union that's really, really championed the cause of workers over the years. It's had its challenges. I think it still has its challenges that we can talk about. But here we are 40 years later, and counting. And you know, when one does and looks at some of the things that I was looking at today, the research and the establishment in 1982 in Klerksdorp, you know, all those years ago. What one can talk about the establishment and that particular period of 1982 to 1994, and then one begins to talk after 1994. But let's start with this. Congratulations, and you know what? It's still around. NUMI's still around, and well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We equally highly appreciate that. Today, we are still standing. Mm. Some of us were leaders of this giant union that has been built on the sweat and blood of the mine workers.
Mm. And you know, let's look at today. You know, when we also have to look into a place where we would look at Nelson Mandela and we would remember him today. So in essence, too, when one does look at, you know, in and around the dates of NUM, Nelson Mandela, particularly, you know, having passed on around the same period that we're celebrating NUM, is there any reflection, is there any takeaway from that particular moment also that now coincides more or less with your 40th? Is there any takeaway from the Nelson Mandela moments?
Yeah, of course. There's in actual fact, we are one of the unions that has adopted the first ones that has adopted the Freedom Charter, and secondly, we're the union that has appointed Mandela as its honorary president when he came back from prison. Mm. So, of course. We have been part of the struggle. We have been part of the liberation struggle as an organization. Mm. We have contributed a lot in the liberation struggle. Mm. So of course, indeed, we can associate. We can really relate to the contribution of the likes of Nelson Mandela.
Mm. Yeah, I read that too. Nelson Mandela, an honorary member. But you've also got somebody very, very key to the 1982 moment. Cyril Ramaphosa going through, you know, the difficulties of his own at this particular point. And I raise that purely because I raise the Mandela moment and everything that's going on around this particular time of the NUM. So as you look at one of your own, going through you know, the problems that we are going through at the moment as a president, as a country, and then also as a parliamentary process, you can't but not think about these kind of things, because here's one of your own, here's somebody who is part of that initial moment of the NUM.
Of course, yes. He was a very young man at his 30s.
I think we'll both agree he's very old now.
No, he's very old now. And at that point in time, he was just qualified as a lawyer.
Mm.
He was practicing with KUSA, the Congress of Union of South Africa. So certainly, he has done the good work. He started building the NUM from the scratch, of course, side by side with the mine workers. He was not a mine worker himself. And you can imagine how difficult it could be when you have to organize people that you are not even working with, people that to a certain extent you cannot relate to. But I think one thing common was that we're all black people, we're all experiencing discrimination, apartheid system, and to a large extent, the workers themselves, the likes of James Mutasi, they were experiencing exploitation at the workplace. Mm. So, of course,
James Mutlatsi would have been president, right?
Yes, James Mutlatsi then became the first president or the founding president, if you like. Yeah, yeah. So, but of course, Ramaphosa is a black person born in South Africa. He was from a family of workers, of course. So, certainly, he will somehow have an experience of exploitation. Living under difficult conditions and so forth and so on.
Do you have any particular view of what's going on at the moment? Has the union formed any particular view of what's going on from a broad? I know we're going to get into the issue of the 40th in a second, but I just need to just address this particular one. I'd be hanged at the nearest tree if I didn't ask you, Broer, whether you formulated any particular view around what's going on around Cyril Ramaphosa, what's going on around Phalaphala, what's going on around, you know, the country at this particular moment, where, you know, people are talking language of impeachment and constitutional issues and you know, challenges are being made to the Constitutional Court, and we've got a panel being made, and the debate that we were going to have tomorrow around this particular port that could lead to impeachment is now postponed by a week. But it's a very trying time in the country with a lot of uncertainty. Have you as a union formulated any particular view?
Not as yet. We have started to look at the report, but of course we'll always be guided by the structures of the organization. So far we haven't really developed a position, but certainly. As citizens, as people who are alive to the politics of the country, we are also having concern that where does this development take us? And we are equally worried about the stability of the country, the stability of the state itself. We are highly worried about the political status where we are now. But we have been saying all the time that we are hopeful and trust that the ANC will be able to handle these matters and be able handling these matters, being cognizant of the society, of the country itself. Because in this process, we should not do any mistakes that will compromise the country. It is our plea that the country should not be compromised. The society should not be compromised. We hope that in whatever decision that will be ultimately taken, it's not going to do any damage to the country.
In your alignment to the ruling party, I've just had Satu, and I need to ask you this. I've just had Satu, and Satu's talking to the ANC conference, and Satu is asking them to do certain things. And maybe you heard that. And they talk about unity being a serious pillar. Prioritize that. Prioritize the economy. get serviced land and all workers' houses through that serviced land issue, crime, and then Eskom. Are you asking them to do anything at this particular conference? Because, you know, sometimes we get caught up in the conversation about leadership and not so much the issues of resolutions and policy. What are you asking them to do?
Mm. Yeah, indeed. I will agree with what Fatou is saying.
Mm.
Amongst other things. But of course, what is important is to bring stability in the country. One big problem that we're having is unemployment. We cannot have a state that is the citizens are highly dependent to the state.
Mm.
We must be able to relieve the state. So out of the Congress the conference in terms of policy direction should be something that will be able to assist the state to be relieved from the dependency. People should be able to work, people should be able to contribute to tax so that the state is able to service other things such as health, such as housing and so forth and so on. So it's very much important that those kind of things are done. And of course, issues of transformation, it's central, it's very critical, it should be addressed. We must make sure that the country is transformed. The issue of land is equally very much important because with land, we can talk employment. With land, you'll be liberating people. People will have sense of ownership. But of course, it should not just be land to people without people working the land. So that should be taken into a serious consideration.
Let's come back to the 40th and the reason why you're here, actually, Brur. Peter Mokaba Stadium. I can't but not think that is a proper place to go and hold, you know, your celebrations. Was that deliberately chosen, or was that just, you know, by the wayside, that Peter Mokaba became the stadium that actually begins to look at your 40th? Because there are certain things that are aligned, that are associated with of course Peter Mokaba. So I'm just asking whether, you know, there was any deliberate intention around the Peter Mokaba Stadium.
Certainly it was deliberate. We could have chosen the other side of Limpopo, in particular the mining site, the Beggarsfort and whatnot. It was deliberate, but there are two things into that. It was political. We thought that Peter Mokaba will be a relevant stadium to go to. It resembles that the youth of the 90s that was very militant and vibrant. And that is basically trying to remind also the young people, because even members of NUM are becoming very young. They are largely in their 30s and early 40s. So certainly it was deliberate. But secondly, from the industry perspective, Limpopo as a province has got a lot of potential in terms of mining, from chrome, platinum, and so forth. So it was deliberate that we also profile ourselves in that province as part of our recruitment program and growth.
You talk about there being a lot of young members now, and you have a lot of young members. So, you know, you make the decisions around, you know, the fact that you've got these young people joining the union. In the 1980s, the NUM was one of the fastest growing unions in the world. I must add that.
In the world,
absolutely. 300,000 members in the 1980s already. Where are you with membership growth and the issues today around unions? Because, you know, some will say, you know, and argue the point that unions are not, you know, as they would have been way back then. You know, as democracy happened, things changed, and now we're dealing with a different devil. and the issues have changed. It's now a you know, the language has changed as well from pre 1994 and post 1994. So from a growth perspective, you know, where are you? Where are you seeing your growth points in when you're looking back over these 40 years? Is the union still? Are there still elements and places to grow into apart from the one that you've already named, the youth? And I suppose that is a big growing point. But where is the conversation around growth with the NUM?
Yeah, certainly there's still potential for growth, but we must also appreciate that there's quite a lot of development that has happened.
Mm.
When we look at the employment stats today and the employment stats yesterday, there's a huge difference. You will see that the industry itself, mining has dropped a lot. Construction also, it has dropped. Energy is quite, it's not even it show any growth if you look at it, because we are also organizing ESCOM, but it's kind of like stagnant. You wouldn't find really a huge employment in a particular period or so. So there is that potential, but because of the developments in terms of retrenchment, the general job losses, and the technology also taking the space where mining used to be quite a huge industry that would be able to employ thousands and thousands of people. But because of technology, some of the companies, they have went the direction of mechanizing the mining and so forth and so on. So as a result of that, there's a huge decline. But the relevance of the trade union movement is still there. And we can prove it by the response of young people in different workplaces. They like the union. They participate in the union structure. They join the union. The only thing that we see, they are assisting us also to move with times, because they are assisting us to apply some of the things that are assisting us to communicate, for instance, your social media and so forth and so on. So yeah, those elements of certain sections that will feel that, I don't need a union. I can speak for myself. I can, you know. But certainly there's a growth and there's still relevance in terms of the trade union movement.
Let's talk about those various sectors. Mining, energy, the ones that you've just touched on briefly at the moment. So what would they be? Mining, energy, construction, metal and allied industries.
And that our scope into metal as well.
Yeah. Energy per se, in essence, and you've been dealing with ESCOM of late as well, and particularly around ESCOM, and you're talking about the kind of technology and the problems ESCOM is facing, and the retrenchments and the money issues and the loaning and the loans, and then ESCOM is retrenching as well. Is there a particular mandate that you approach different sectors differently? For example, you'd approach mining very differently from energy, and energy very, very differently from construction. Do you have very, very different conversations when you're in those specific sectors?
Yeah, certainly. Certainly, the approach will be different. Like I've said, mining is quite, as much as it has declined a little bit, but it's still a labor-intensive kind of an operation. So the approach will be a bit different compared to others. And obviously, when you look at energy, there will be different aspects to that. So of course, it will be a total different approach. Same applies to construction. It will be a different approach at all.
Let me go to the callers. Raymond in Honeydew wants to put in a question. Raymond in Honeydew?
Yeah, land issue. Land and the economy, should be reverted back, to the state, should be given back, to the state. The land and the economy, should be owned and controlled by the state. The economy, I mean, should be open and closed, democratized, I mean, to give, I mean, every able body a chance, I mean, to make a living. When I'm coming to the job loss, the issue for job loss in our country, we fail to see, I mean, how possibly our government, I mean, shows a bit safe with COSATU, which on 1 May, Y2K launch campaign against job loss in our country. They're claiming that by regulation could create a new and quality jobs in our country. Our government is also a bad government. I mean, is by regulation government. They're claiming that they will create a new and a quality job. I mean, more than 25,000 working class, I mean, job, I mean, lost their job at Eskom and also Telkom.
Raymond, let's leave it there. My conversation, of course, is with Mpho Pakeadi, the NUM turning 40 on the 4th of December, of course, and he is the National Union of Mine Workers Deputy General Secretary. Mpho, you heard the question there, and I have a trailer on that for you, just a short edition, talking about unemployment and jobs and jobs and jobs. My question would be also to consider, is there, and I want to put it this way, deliberately so, is there anything that you can do? And when I mean you, I don't mean it personally, that industries, that entities in South Africa can do to save jobs. Because sometimes it is the technology. Sometimes it is, you know, the way industries go. And what is it then that one needs to do to begin to talk about job security when government and others tell you that, you know, job losses are something that is happening and they are a reality? When you hear that, what is it then that you can do? Or is it something that you've accepted? How do you deal with it?
Yeah, well, look, that is a big crisis that collectively from business, from government, from all the stakeholders, including even trade unions, must sit down and look at solutions. And we think that other partners in this whole thing, they are really having a choice. For instance, business. They just decide, it's not like really it's something that is that difficult. They just decide that, look, this is what we're going to do. And as and when they take decisions to retrench, to downsize, to do all sorts of things, or maybe even changing things to be more of technology. They are quite deliberate with their intentions and strategy.
Yeah.
And basically that is informed by maximizing profits. There is nothing more than that. The whole thing is, if you like, is just pushed by greed, because they will want to make more money at the expense of workers. So it is possible.
Sure. How do you when you talk of technology and you talk about, you know, that leads to job losses as well, and that's how generally we look at technology as well. That's the kind of conversation that we have: technology leading to job losses, less people on the shop floor and on the factory floors. How does one change that conversation into a positive, into a conversation that makes it work for you, specifically in your sectors, in your space? How does technology begin to not be that negative, but rather, you know, something that you engage positively and can create jobs? Is there even a discussion around how that happens?
Well, there's a bit of discussion, but I don't think business is really committed on that, because there are two things here. when you start, because some of the things that relate to technology, sometimes they are assisting in terms of development, being on same par with the Western countries. Again, they are improving quality in terms of production. To a certain extent, some of them, they are also even addressing issues of health and safety.
Mm.
But our issue here is that training and development must be taken before anything happens, before we implement any technology. We should be able to prepare the workforce and be able to say, we will be training the workforce so that as and when we implement these new technologies, the workforce is on par, they are able to adapt, they are able to, we are able to save jobs. We are creating alternative jobs because COVID-19 has taught us and has shown us that indeed with technology, companies are still able to make money. So it is possible. So we are thinking that training and development is one of the solutions that can be considered so that you bring technology and the workforce together.
And Paul, I want to jump right into the other side of that kind of conversation, women and working underground and women in this particular industry. The number of women, you help me here. The number of women I would suggest working in this particular industry is on the increase because more and more women find it as an option and also find it as an industry where they can find themselves at the moment. But of course, it's male-dominated. It's a male-dominated industry. There is a lot of patriarchy and there's enormous challenges, you know, to begin to engage women in this particular sector of mining per se. How from the NUM are you engaging all the conversations around more and more women beginning to take up positions, either working underground or as engineers and or in the industry in general? How is that conversation happening within the NUM?
Well, that is part of our transformation drive, and we have long started that program. I think it was highly encouraged by Mining Charter that was giving a direction to say at least mining companies should be able to employ 10%. When we were taking stock some few years ago, some of the mining companies, they were quite close to that target. Some they managed to achieve it. But we think that women are not just a small fraction of the population. They are equally big in the population. We cannot be limiting them to 10%. It is work in progress. We, in terms of just general employment, we think we are almost getting there. But again, with managerial positions, I think that's where the struggle is. It's still very, very, very huge. It is one thing that we'll never abandon as a program. It will continuously be in our agenda. We appreciate that in certain levels there's progress. There and there you'll find women in key positions at least in the mining. And few of them at least you'll even find them being CEOs and the like. So we think there is progress in that regard. We just need to soldier on and push on and on so that we ultimately see equality.
When you do talk about wages and when you do talk about engaging, you know, let's just use the terminology, the mine bosses and all of these others in these engagements, I'm always led to believe and listen to the conversation from a particular union's point of view that might suggest that the South African mining sector is a profitable one. And that foreign exchange earnings for the country is in a positive space. So having said that, and if you agree with that, when you look back at the 40 years of being a union and somebody quite important in the sector, the historical events And I look back to 1987, the 1987 strike, and that more or less the Provident Funds, and ultimately it happened in 1989, where I think black people also, because I think a year or two late earlier, white people had that particular, you know, advantage and or access to black people in 1989. So there, 1987, that historical event stands out like a sore thumb on your calendar. People speak to it. It's historical. In recent times, which other would you put in the same kind of vein that you would say, you know what, we've made massive advances. Just look at us here and look at us over here and look at us over here. What other moments stick out for the NUM over these kind of periods?
Well, as much as health and safety is a continuous program, it is our view that at least we have done well.
Yeah.
Equally, is emanating from the 1987 strike. We have pushed a lot in terms of health and safety.
Mm.
The other aspect is housing.
Mm.
That we think that we have moved from single-sex hostels to a converted hostels that a person can live in one room alone, to some of the hostels being converted to family units, where families were able to move from the rural areas or the so-called labor sending areas to come and stay with their families or their spouses and their husbands, if you like, and the family being able to grow together. We have pushed companies to even engage on housing projects where new developments of housing were started to be developed by companies. Mm. An example is Royal Bafokeng, that we think that it was a huge project that of its unique nature, that the company Royal Bafokeng took a risk to be the first ones to engage in such a project. And we think that they have learned lessons. We have learned lessons as a trade union movement.
Mm.
Remember, we had to deal with a group of people who ordinarily were not qualifying for an RDP house, who were not qualifying for a home loan or a bond, if you like, but have to be put into a system where they have to own a house. So it was a huge job that needs to be done.
Mm.
Ultimately, few people are owning houses, and we think it's a continuous project that will be watching the space and hoping that it will be concluded at some point and majority of our members will be benefiting. That has been extended to various mining companies, very big, both gold and platinum sector.
Mm.
They have done well in terms of, they have done some work, I wouldn't really say well, but they have done some work in terms of housing for members.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mpo
Phakathi. So among those, the ones that we can say we have pushed a lot as an organization. And as I've indicated earlier on, including issues relating to transformation, we have changed numbers. Today, we do have black people on managerial positions with decision-making. Today, we do have black people, some who are mine managers at their own right.
Mm. Mpo Phakathi, I have to say thank you. Congratulations, firstly, again. And thank you so much for the chat, sir.
Thank you, my brother. You are welcome. I just want to pass this message through your program, man.
Sure.
Something that I didn't indicate earlier on, that we are mourning the six young workers that we have lost as they were driving from Mpumalanga through a car accident. As much as we are celebrating these 40 years, we are celebrating it under a dark cloud. We want to pass our sincere condolences to their families, to their colleagues, and to everybody who relates to NUM and their families.
Mpo Phakathi,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, my brother.
Thank you. That's Mpo Phakathi, National Union of Mine Workers Deputy Secretary General.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.